You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello, my friends. Welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. There is a lot to talk about. So before we get to our guest today, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. It's a topic I talk about frequently, too frequently. It's the topic of police suicide, law enforcement suicide. Today I'm going to talk about it again, but I'm going to talk about it from a little different angle. Last year, it was our unfortunate reality that more officers killed themselves than gave their lives in the line of duty. This was noted, and there were actually some articles about it. I'm glad to see that there is some recognition of this terrible wave of law enforcement deaths. But we are not addressing it as a profession, not nearly enough. And there are some agencies which do a pretty good job of at least understanding about law enforcement suicide, and then there's others that don't. About a year ago, there was a detective from Dallas, 18-year police veteran, who took his own life in his patrol car on the grounds of one of the Dallas police facilities. Well, this was a particularly egregious case because the sheriff in Dallas had knowledge that this detective was suffering from post-traumatic stress and had disappeared. His wife had called him in as a missing person, and there had been a be on the lookout alert sent out for him. She canceled it. She told her officers not to look for him. And they found him dead 2 days later. This sheriff didn't even have the humanity, the common humanity, to allow her officer to be honored with an honor guard. Pretty much every police agency that I know of, when an active duty law enforcement officer dies, no matter what the cause, they respect that officer's accomplishments, his or her service to the community, and at least have a police presence there and usually do a flag fold and taps. This sheriff refused to allow any of that. Refused to allow even officers to attend in uniform. And until the media showed up there, she had no intention of attending herself. But she did, and she gave some really insensitive remarks. And unfortunately, she was an appointed sheriff and still holds that job today, which is shocking to me. What a piece of human garbage she is. Not even to allow her own officers. I mean, first of all, to cancel the alert, I think that's criminal. Secondly, to be so insensitive as to the manner of death, and not even allow the family the comfort of having the department show their respect, to me, is such an incredible lack of leadership. I'm not even going to mention her name because she sickens me. She should not be wearing any badge, let alone be the head of an agency. Well, it's happened again in Texas, again. Just a short period of time ago, a couple of weeks, a police officer took his own life. Another suicide. And the police chief there has issued an order not to allow not to allow honors to be presented, not to be given any type of recognition for the job this officer did. And not only that, but believe it or not, never even contacted the widow. The same as in Dallas. This sheriff in Dallas and this police chief in Fort Worth, I mean, is there something in the water there? Is there something in the water that's poisoning the brains of police leaders? They didn't even have the humanity, the common courtesy to contact the wife, the widow of their officers who committed suicide. You know, there's enough trouble in this profession with poor leadership. When you have a police chief and a sheriff that don't even have the heart, don't even have the respect to contact a widow of one of their own officers who took their own life, it really tells you that the police profession is in trouble. I can tell you this, that I'm not going to forget this. And I'm going to call them out every single time. The men and women who are serving, they are facing the risks, both physical, psychological. They are giving their lives, they are giving their health, they're giving so much of themselves every single day. Those who suffer from post-traumatic stress, which is often the case when it comes to police suicide, need help. They can be fixed. If you are one of these officers, please. People do care. I'm one of them. And you can contact me anytime, and I will get you some help. You can contact me at randy@thewoundedblue.org. The Wounded Blue is the police and law enforcement assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. And post-traumatic stress injury is just that, an injury, and can be treated. As far as these two, quote, leaders in Texas, the sheriff of Dallas, police chief in Fort Worth, I can't even say on the air what I think about you. But I will support your people because they're the ones doing the job. So to my friends in Fort Worth PD, to my friends at Dallas Sheriff's Office, you have my sympathy on the death of your people and my sympathy because of the craven leadership that you are forced to serve under. Let's talk about some other things, my view from the blue. Big news out of Chicago last week. A judge acquitted all of the Chicago cops that were accused of covering up in the Laquan McDonald shooting. As you probably know, unless you've been living under a bush, the officer who killed Laquan McDonald was sentenced to about 6 years, 7 years for shooting that individual. The public outcry from that had another effect, and that was that they wanted the politicians in Chicago wanted a pound of flesh from other people, so they decided they were going to arrest all the cops that were there, charge them with covering it up. And the evidence simply wasn't there to begin with. But the prosecutor didn't care. The politicians didn't care. They just wanted to fly some police heads up the flagpole, ruining their lives, ruining their careers. The fact of the matter is they did nothing. They did nothing criminal. They did nothing that had anything to do with covering up the death of McDonald, which was videotaped, and there was justice. The judge acquitted them all. But what this shows is, once again, the willingness for district attorneys and prosecutors around the United States suddenly looking for political scapegoats in their law enforcement community. We're seeing this trend occur more and more and more as activists who are financed very often by individuals who have a very liberal point of view, like George Soros, and they want to rot out the law enforcement infrastructure from the inside. How do they do it? Where they always have influence, and that is on elections. You pour enough money into an election, and you buy your candidate. That's what's happening all over the country. It's happened in St. Louis. It's happened in Philadelphia. It's happened in a number of other locations. And when these activist prosecutors get in, they have a political agenda, and it isn't about law enforcement. It isn't about safety for the citizenry. It's about furthering their own political goals and agendas. And where is the low-hanging fruit in that? Police. Prosecuting cops is becoming in vogue, if you will. And what does that do? That is having a very chilling effect on cops. They look at what's going on and they say, well, wait a minute. Why am I going out here putting my life on the line, literally putting my life on the line, working my butt off trying to put bad people in jail, and for my thanks, I get prosecuted in the event that an arrest goes bad? Not only that, but in New Hampshire, this is, I think I touched upon this last week, but this is so mind-boggling to me that the state legislature is trying to remove the legal grounds for police officers to use deadly force in arrest situations. I've never heard anything so insane in my life. And these are legislators, excuse me. And they actually, with a straight face, try to pass a law that doesn't allow cops to use deadly force? What in God's name is going on? It shows you that there is a trend taking place. And the trend is about politics. Not about justice, not about doing the right thing, but about politics. And this is a frightening time to be a cop in a lot of areas because of this type of political frenzy in the anti-law enforcement community, which should be part of the system itself. You know, there's not enough danger in being a cop, right? In fact, let's talk about this insanity that happened in Arizona. An Arizona terrorist. The guy's a terrorist. He had contact with ISIS. Carried out a lone wolf attack on a police officer. And he identified this officer. He attacked him with a knife. And he was affiliated with ISIS. Well, it didn't work out so good for him. He's now going to prison. But he made the mistake of attacking this police officer, and it didn't work out so good for him. Maricopa County. They made sure that he's now serving prison time. But this shows, once again, who's on the front lines? Who's on the front lines of fighting crime, fighting terrorism? It's the American police officer. It's the cop on the beat. It's the cop on the street. And every day they face more physical danger. when we get to the end of the show and I do my end of watch segment, I have more names to read. And these are the officers who gave their lives in the line of duty. There's been a shooting almost every single day in January. Officers are being shot. Officers are being struck by cars. They're being attacked. Nine have already died in the line of duty. Well, when you look at everything that is taking place in society, you would think that people would elect, politicians would appoint individuals who are being placed in positions as prosecutors, as district attorneys. You would think that they would want people that are concerned about justice, are concerned about safety, are concerned about law enforcement, are concerned about all the things that a prosecutor or district attorney should be, and not politics, not about getting elected, not about trying to push a political viewpoint, not about willing to sacrifice a police officer for their own political ends. The more this happens, the more the war on cops is going to take its toll. Because make no mistake about it, it is part of the war on cops. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. For my active duty law enforcement officers, and probably some military as well, if you wear body armor, you want to arrest the odor. Yes, you want to arrest the odor because we know how nasty it can get. StinkyVest.com. That is where you get Arrest My Vest Spray. It's military police grade odor eliminating spray. This is amazing stuff. And you don't actually have to use it just for your vest, although it's made specifically for that. It is all natural. It has no harsh chemicals, but it's good for basically any odor eliminating at all. It's safe on your Kevlar. It is really amazing stuff. And you know how uncomfortable it can get, how hot those vests are. So check it out, stinkyvest.com. And it is the technology of odor-absorbing molecules that makes this such an amazing product. Check it out, stinkyvest.com. If you are one of my active duty law enforcement officer listeners, and you are like most of law enforcement, and you work extra jobs, you work the security job, the traffic jobs, most of the time you go through your own agency to do it. But there is another option as well, which can also lead to additional work assignments. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. These are my friends at law enforcement specialists, and they are based out of Arizona, but they are in most of the states in the United States, and they assist you in getting those extra work assignments. The security jobs, the traffic jobs, and they work with your agency so that you're protected as well. So, and also, if you're one of my listeners who actually needs off-duty police officers to work security or to work extra jobs in traffic or whatever, you can contact them as well. So go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com, and see about getting some extra work assignments. And they are great people. I know them very well, and they are some good folks. Or you can call them 1-888-572-2442. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio is Ron Leonard. Ron does a bunch of different things for an organization called Canines for Christ, which is a therapy dog response team, believe it or not, for not only law enforcement and first responders, but for other people in need as well. Now, Ron is a 20-year military veteran of the United States Navy and National Guard. He has been deployed to Desert Storm and Iraqi Freedom. He is now the Canine National Volunteer Coordinator for Canines for Christ and also a crisis responder. Now, if she could talk, his dog Molly would be here too, because Molly is his is his crisis response therapy dog for law enforcement and first responders. Ron, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Well, Randy, it's just wonderful to be here, and it's a privilege to be able to talk to you and your audience.
So is Molly there with you? Can she hear us?
Yes, Molly is. She's actually sleeping in the other room. We were just now having breakfast together, and now she's kind of looking at me and says, don't bother me.
I understand. Tell me, first of all, coming out of the Navy and the National Guard, retired military, how did you get into this type of program?
Well, I just it kind of evolved, Randy. I was retired National Guard in 2004. I did some other things, and then in 2011, we had a dog named Gabby that was just a regular dog, and she died of kidney failure at age 12. And so Gary became very close to us, and we thought, well, you know, we really need another dog. So we went and we picked Molly out. Molly was a rescue. Molly was left out in the Nashville, Tennessee area to die with her mom in 18-degree weather. And somebody found her, and then we actually adopted Molly from a foster home. And Marilyn's mother was going into a rehab center in Kansas City, and we thought, well, it would be good to have Molly as kind of a companion therapy dog that we could take up and visit. Well, after that, I came across the Ministry of Canines for Christ, Chaplain Larry Randolph out of Tampa, Florida. One thing led to another, and so we started training Molly as a therapy dog, and then Molly turned from a therapy dog into a crisis response dog because her temperament was so calm, and we were able to use her in that. Fast forward now, at 8 years old, Molly has been over 3,500 visits and has probably responded to about 150 law enforcement personnel.
Okay, so I understand the concept of a therapy dog. Tell me how, first of all, how does this fit into when a law enforcement officer is in crisis, or how does that function? How does that work?
Well, what we do is when an officer tragically goes down in the line of duty, obviously we work with the department. We'll go to the funerals. We will minister to the family there, and the dog becomes a ministry of presence is what we love to call it. The dog is just there. It calms people down. The dog is there to pet. The dog licks on them. The Veterinarian Association, Randy, has also said that when a dog or cat licks you, there is a happy chemical that goes through your body. And I'm not going to argue with the Veterinarian Association. And so what it does, it actually just makes people happy. and calm, and it just calms them down, especially children that have lost a mom or dad in law enforcement and stuff that are 4, 5, and 6 years old that are just traumatized by what happened, and we're able to just calm them down, that situation. The most recent thing you may remember in Dixon, Tennessee, right outside of Nashville, we had Sergeant Baker that went down the line of duty here, and we went to their funeral, and Molly was a tremendous aspect to that. Molly also went to the Waffle House shooting, if you remember that, in Nashville, and was able to be with even some law enforcement personnel there that were doing the crime scene tape and everything, and actually able to calm them down during this tragic situation.
So when you get information about either an officer who was killed in a line of duty or some other crisis, is it a police department that actually calls you and says, hey, we
yep.
need you?
Well, actually what I do is I'll work with I'll be scouring the area of the internet or Twitter, different things like that, and even Randy, your site, because you're so good of having those on there when a crisis happens. And then what I'll do is I'll reach out to the police department, to the 911 dispatchers, and the first responders. And what I'll do is I'll offer Molly to come out, and 9 times out of 10 they'll say yes, we would like. Feel free to come to the funeral. Feel free to do this. And so I'll reach out to them, and then I get their permission to be able to come out. We never, with our dogs, we never self-deploy. We do not go out just unannounced. We try to make sure we get permission of the commanding officer or the captain or the lieutenant to be able to come into that situation and to be able to help them out.
Now, I know you are, you're in the Tennessee area, so you
yes.
respond to just what happens in Tennessee, is that correct?
I respond to Tennessee, we'll go to Alabama, we'll go to Georgia, different place like that. The Canines for Christ organization has over 1,000 trained therapy dogs. So when a crisis will happen, like the last one that recently happened in DeKalb, Georgia, with the officer tragically going down, and thank God I just found out today the canine is going to be okay, which is wonderful. But the officer tragically was killed in the line of duty. We've got some people that live right outside of DeKalb, and they will be reaching out to that department to try to use their therapy dog for that and everything. So we use other dogs that are in different parts of the country. It just depends on if we have one in the area.
I'm curious about the dogs themselves. So tell me about how they are certified to be therapy dogs.
Okay. Well, if our volunteers get a dog that is a puppy, we encourage them to take them through Petco, PetSmart obedience training, and that really teaches them just basic commands of sit, stay, be nice, different things like that. And then we have certifiers across the country after they turn about 2 years old, and we take them through the AKC, which is the American Kennel Club. And one of the reasons we use that is they have over 1 million dogs under their organization and everything, and one of the largest good citizenship award for a dog. And so we take them through that, and then after that, then they become a therapy dog, and we just ask our people to take them out to nursing homes, to different places, and practice becomes perfect. And then the dogs are eventually trained to work in crisis response, and that's how we do it. All our dogs are also covered by $1 million liability insurance, so that really helps the police departments and others when it comes to liability.
Of course, and we all know that that is one of the main topics in these decisions. So when you get information that there is a crisis, does it always have to be the fact that an officer was killed, or do you respond to other, because I mean there's all kinds of
We respond to all kinds of things. We'll respond to tragic suicides, we'll respond to a child that has gone down through a law enforcement family or something. We just responded to right outside of Nashville, Clay County. There was a domestic abuse that went ugly, and a young child was killed, and it really affected the law enforcement in that area. So we responded to them and also responded to the school through the school resource officer, because everybody was affected in that small area. When you have a town of 3,000 to 4,000, anything like that really does affect people like that. So, and also too, as you know, Randy, being a retired police officer, anything that has to do with a child always affects an officer. And so we really try to reach out to the officers when there's been a child killed in their vicinity so that we can help them and comfort their families during that time.
How, walk me through it. Walk me through a therapy session with you and Molly.
Okay.
Tell me how that, how it works mechanically, you know, and then, yeah, just walk me through a call out.
Okay, Carl. Okay, I can use actually two of them that we did in the last 6 months. Molly, like I said, responded to Clay County. A father and mother got into an argument. Shots were fired. The child was killed. The mother was injured, and the dad committed suicide. And so the officers responded to that. And so when I emailed the department and the school, they asked Molly to come out and to minister. So Molly went all day to the school and spent times with the police department that was involved in the call out, with the school resource officer that was involved in that school, and also with the sister who had lost her sibling during that time, that she just came and spent an hour of petting the dog, and Molly just stayed there for an hour. Then the command showed up, and they, you know, just petted the dog and loved on Molly, and it just had a chance for them to see the goodness of what's going on. Another call that we made was in Alabama, just right across the line from Nashville into Huntsville. There was a second grader that brought his gun to school and shot a 8-year-old in the hand. And that really affected the whole law enforcement community in that area, because they had to respond to that with that school. That's the first time anything's ever happened there. And so we responded to that with the dog being there all day long and people being able to come out and just pet the dog, love on the dog, joke around, and just really just kind of, you know, be in a joyous situation of what turned out to be a tragic situation.
How does the law enforcement community react to Molly coming out?
Oh, they love it. I mean, I've never had a complaint whatsoever. They love it when community is involved. As you know, as a retired officer there, that you know, you love it when the community gets involved and everything. And so the law enforcement is just glad that that somebody's getting involved. I had a Nashville police officer told me once, we meet so many people during the course of a day that don't care. It's really good when we find out people that give a rip. You know? And so it's kind of the same thing, as you know, with the law enforcement officers. They're just glad we give a rip, you know, everything. And
exactly.
So we had the opportunity. I've never had any problems whatsoever. Now, I've had departments saying, hey, we're okay. If we need you, we'll call you. And that's fine also, you know, and stuff like that. They're in good shape. They've got their counselors in place. They've got a good chaplaincy program. But you get to some of these smaller areas, and they don't have the chaplaincy in good place. And a lot of them don't even have the crisis response in a good place, because they've never had to practice that. They've never had to really go out on a crisis response. So I've had the opportunity when we ministered at the Dixon County area, when Sergeant Baker was gone, we are really helping Dixon County now to develop a crisis response plan, because they never had one in place, because they never really needed one, you know, and everything. But now they do. So, and you know, you're finding, as a law enforcement officer now being retired, more and more, a lot of these smaller communities are getting hit by tragedy, as New York City or Las Vegas, Nevada is getting hit, you know, and everything like that. They're finding out that they're having to deal with it too when an officer goes down the line of duty.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And you know, there's 18,000 different police agencies in this country, and 80% of them have less than 20 police officers. And many of these rural communities, as you said, don't really deal on a frequent basis with a crisis situation that is, you know, where an officer is catastrophically injured or killed in the line of duty. But this is one of those things that really should be planned for. So it doesn't become a mess when it does happen.
Oh, it does. I mean, just as you know, the last week was a real tough week for law enforcement, which is natural deaths. And also in the Houston, Texas area where three officers went down. Luckily, they're all going to be okay. But that's three officers in one day. That's a lot, you know, and everything. And so, you know, it's, you know, we have a group in Houston that works out with that. When we had the Santa Fe shooting there, we had a group in Houston that went to that school, you know, and helped them out. In Parkman, you know, there, Molly was actually deployed to Benton County. If you remember when Mayfield, Paducah, Kentucky had that school shooting, you know, and everything. And so, you know, we just want to be ready to go for, or to show up for duty when crisis happens. People ask me, Randy, during the day, well, what do you do all day, Ron? I said, well, I just look for crisis to happen, you know? And so I kid with that, but it's a reality. That's what I do a lot. This last week, I have spent 20 hours of just looking through crisis because we've had so much happen, you know, and stuff. I told Larry Randolph, our founder of Canines for Crisis, I said, I hope this week's just a little more quieter. You know, I don't want the crisis to happen. That's something I don't wish for, but as you know, we live in a reality of a world where we know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
As you talked about, you handle pretty much the Tennessee area, but you said that you have 1,000 people out there all over the country.
Yeah. And we have 900 volunteers and 1,000 dogs. We probably will hit our 1,000 volunteer mark within probably the next month or two. Larry Randolph started this faith-based ministry, Canines for Christ, back in 2008 with a borrowed dog and his wife.
Wow.
And now we have 1,000 dogs out there. So it's really grown. People see this as a unique fit. As you have shared when you've emailed me before, this is a ministry that has just got a real fit that you can just go in and because it's not being done, you know, and stuff that much. And so, you know, so we have, like I said, 1,000 dogs that are ready to call. Now, some of our dogs aren't as trained to be able to go out and do that. We probably, I would say, have probably 400 to 500 dogs that are specifically trained to move into trauma response if we needed to. But we do use our other dogs also because they're therapy dogs, so they can just kind of move in and just learn on the job, if you know what I'm talking about.
Let me ask you this. Now, you know, I am about to launch the Wounded Blue. It is the support
and assistance. I'm excited about that. I'm excited, yeah.
You and me both. It is the support and assistance organization for injured and disabled police officers.
Yes, wonderful.
How do you see, I mean, I've actually gotten a number of queries about therapy dogs for injured officers. If a police officer wanted to or felt the need to have a therapy dog, how would they go about locating one and having it, having a, you know, a trained therapy dog work with them?
Well, they could actually work through us if they wanted to, if they don't mind the faith-based. If they don't, I can be glad to get them to another organization like Pet Partners and different things like that. But a lot of them just want a good trained therapy dog. And what we've done recently in the last year is we just recently worked with a guy that is a retired law enforcement officer, chaplain, and now he's a chaplain over 4 hospice areas in Alabama, and he deals with a lot of retired law enforcement that are in hospice, you know, and everything. And so what we did is we trained a dog in Houston, Texas, and now that dog just last week got partnered up with this guy. That dog's going around all these hospice centers and working with retired law enforcement folks, you know, and everything like that. So
now that's something, let's talk about that for a second. This is something I have never even considered that would be a need, but I guess as our population ages.
Yeah.
And we, you know, people of all walks of life, you know, wind up in hospice. What an interesting concept that your organization would cater to that need.
Yeah, and what we did is train there. But with the officers that are in, like in Nashville, we had a couple of officers that are dealing, as you know, PTSD has become very prevalent within law enforcement and everything like that. And so we dealt with a couple of officers that are struggling with PTSD. And 2 years ago, we were able to hook them up with 2 therapy dogs. And they're just their personal dogs. They're not police canines or anything like that. And they're able to take them everywhere. They take them to work with them sometime when they're working in the office. They don't take them in the car, but they take them to work. And it's just a real comfort to them. And one officer told me, it's so neat, Ron, that after a day's work, I can go home to my best friend. And my best friend will always love me, you know. And he said, I may have just got out, like one officer just got on an officer involved shooting. And he went home, and that dog was there to lick him. And, I mean, it really helped him because he was shaken up by it, you know. You never want to take a life. You never want to shoot anybody. That's not your goal in life, you know. That's the thing. And so, but when you do, that dog was able to comfort that officer. And it was a small-town police department. And so he had the chance to go home to that dog, and the dog just licked all over him, and it was great. Yeah.
You know, I that's something I can directly relate to. I remember distinctly being involved in a shooting that resulted in a death, and I was living by myself, and I remember coming home to my home, and I'm a cat man, and I had my cats there, and I got to tell you, Ron, the fact that they were there was a very comforting thing for me, So I can really relate to what you're saying here, I really see a tremendous need for what your organization does, and I'm really
happy. As you know, officer involved shootings are much more prevalent than an officer down, you know, and everything like that. And so, and usually the officer's okay. It's the suspect that gets it. He's telling everything, and so, you know. But if you just Google officer down. I mean, officer involved shooting, you'll come across 2 to 3 a day, you know, and stuff where there's been a shooting. And that has as much effect on an officer as sometimes a death does, you know, and everything, because they've had to use their gun. And, you know, they're saying 90% are not supposed to use their gun. Well, I'm 10% that had to.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's when this is probably one of the least understood aspects of law enforcement because, you know, police officers are trained from the time that they go through the academy throughout their career, for that one moment, which will probably never come, but when it does, it is such a foreign concept for a normal adjusted human being to be forced to take a human life that it can have some dramatic effects. Now, not just post-traumatic stress disorder, because that is actually not something that is a component of a shooting. It is a possibility that it may develop.
And, the aftermath.
Right, right. Yeah. And so there are tremendous, you know, inroads now into treating post-traumatic stress injury so that it does not get into post-traumatic stress disorder. And it sounds like what your organization does could be a component of dealing with that situation so that it becomes something that can be dealt with on a healthier basis.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and one thing that you'll find with most of our volunteers around the country and this is a calling. This is something that we want to do. It's not something that we have to do. It's not a vocation. We're not making a lot of money off of it. It's something that we want to do because we care about police officers. I actually started our concentration on law enforcement about 3 years ago. And I have probably close to just 35 volunteers, which is not a lot of a 900, but 35 volunteers that's all they do is they go out and deal with law enforcement. I have a guy with his dog named Ben in Atlanta that deals with 5 law enforcement agencies right in the Atlanta area. And as you know, Atlanta has a bunch of them, you know, everything. And so, you know, we're just able to train these folks to do this. And they just go out and say, this, I love law enforcement. I love first responders. I love 911 dispatchers. So this is what I want to do with my life, you know.
I appreciate that there are people like you out there in the communities that you care enough about your law enforcement to, you know, play such an active role in something that's life affecting for them. Now, let me ask you this. I actually just had a recent conversation with a veteran police officer who has not only he was shot multiple times but he's been in multiple gunfights. And he has a therapy dog, a beautiful German Shepherd. And he and I were talking about it, and I didn't realize the depth of that relationship and how it can really make a difference in a positive way for a police officer who's been through that. So, you know, with what you guys do, it's a brief encounter, so to speak. Molly is your dog. What would the case scenario be? Because, you know, a lot of my listeners are law enforcement officers.
Sure.
And I'm sure that some of them are relating to this conversation right now and thinking about, well, maybe that would be something that I would benefit from. Tell me again how an officer can obtain a therapy dog. Other than, you know,
sure,
just going down to the...
They can, you know, they can email me directly if they want to at inchristalone2004@yahoo.com, or they can visit www.k9forchrist.org. That's www.k9forchrist.org, and I'll be glad to get them going in the right direction. Obviously, I would need to make sure that they, you know, they had a dog of their own that they wanted to certify, or if they wanted to get a dog, then we would help them find the dog. We are in touch with probably 600 to 700 different rescue agencies that have wonderful therapy dogs.
Let's be very clear: the dogs are, they don't care if you're Christian or Jewish or Muslim.
No, Jewish, Christian, doesn't matter. Just basically would say that you're willing just to wear the vest and go out there with them, you know, and different things like that. And the vest covers, you know, the liability insurance and everything like that. Yeah, we just want to make sure that people are willing just to go out and just use their dog as a ministry of presence. Yeah, we're not, you know, going to be a stickler or anything like that. No, we're sure not.
Well, this is really an interesting conversation. And I think that, you know, especially with kind of the anti-law enforcement attacks that have been going on in the media and from, you know, even some governmental, you know, people, politicians, that type of stress really wears on law enforcement officers.
Yeah, and to top it off, you get your oversight committees and everything like that.
Exactly.
But, you know, the thing about it with your show, with you having so many listeners, you have people that have listened that have been chaplains in the force, that have been religious in the force, non-religious. You've got the whole spectrum listening to you, you know, and everything like that. And so, you know, people, this kind of organization will be great for people because they'll go, I can be flexible, you know, or whatever, you know, and stuff. So it's, so it's wonderful, wonderful to have that. You know, Chris, who's the founder of Officer Down Memorial Page and everything like that. I love it when he says that when an officer goes down, a whole nation grieves. And he's really true. You know, that's really true. When an officer goes down, a whole nation grieves. And at the end of the day, we're on the same team, and we need to realize that. You know, at the end of the day, I need to support my law enforcement officers who are out there because they're doing a job I cannot do so that I can be protected and sleep well at night.
I'm with you. And I sincerely believe that the unity of the police and the people is absolutely essential to not only accomplishing the law enforcement mission, but also to give comfort to the people that law enforcement serves by having a relationship and believing that others care about our officers and being able to show that in a positive way, I think is something that's essential for...
Well, you know, that's very true. Well, you know, that just a personal, just kind of a story of mine. I was never able to go into law enforcement. I wear glasses and have astigmatism. So, Randy, if I was with you on a ride-along, you would say, give me the gun, Ron, please. You know? And so, you know, I'm not able to do that, but I'm able to give back like this through the community and be part of law enforcement without being commissioned and carrying a gun, you know, and everything like that. And I had a friend of mine that's a captain over the drug force in Nashville that said this. He said, Ron, what you're doing with Molly for law enforcement is just as important as an officer that carries a gun and is commissioned. And everything like that. And
there are many ways to serve, Ron, and you have found yours. So once again, how do you get contacted, and what's the website? And
website is www.k9forchrist. That's the number nine, k9forchrist.org. Or they can email me in Christ Alone in Christ Alone 2004 at yahoo.com. And I will be glad to get in touch with them and to be able to help them. And if they said, well, I really feel more comfortable with another place, I would be able to get them in touch with three or four organizations that I have contacts with and everything like that. But I'd be glad to do it.
I really do appreciate that. Thank you for your service. And thank you for taking the time to join me in the interview room at Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, Ron Leonard.
Thanks, so.
I want to take a moment and tell you about the books that I have written and are available on Amazon.com. My first three books were all law enforcement related, and they were stories. My first was True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, followed by A Cop's Life, and then the third, True Blue to Protect and Serve. My latest book came out just in September. It's called The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And this was an amazing book for me to put together. They are the stories of people throughout this country, people who have done amazing things with their lives, about who their personal heroes were and how they inspired them. This is a book that I hope will touch the lives of people all over this country. If you get a chance, check it out, Amazon.com. It is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. As we start 2019, I want to tell you about something I've been working on for more than 2 years, and it is now coming to fruition. It is called The Wounded Blue, the assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. I'm really excited about this. I have neglected to mention it because I wanted to wait until we had our approval as a 501c3 nonprofit. The organization is going to be a national organization to assist injured and disabled law enforcement officers who have unfortunately been abandoned or left alone by their police agencies and their cities, very often to live in poverty. I know that is hard to believe, but it is very true. We are in the fundraising portion of our existence right now. And of course, we'll have to do that as long as we are an organization. But while we are getting ready to launch, it is time to start raising money for these men and women. If you would, go to this website. It is www.thewoundedblue.org. Take a look at it. And there is a donate button. And we are now a 501c3, which means that all of your donations are tax deductible. I will be telling you much more about this organization as time goes by, as we launch it. And this is a very exciting time. We are going to be changing lives of many in law enforcement. TheWoundedBlue.org.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we have the unfortunate duty to pay our respects to the men and women of the law enforcement profession who have given their lives in the line of duty the previous week. This week, I have two names to read. They bring to a total of 9 for law enforcement fatalities in the month of January 2019. The first is Deputy Sheriff Ray Horn of the Comal County Sheriff's Office in Texas. Deputy Sheriff Ray Horn suffered a fatal heart attack shortly after participating in his agency's mandatory physical fitness testing. He had completed the testing and left the facility when he suffered the heart attack while driving his patrol car near the intersection of FM 2009 and Dimrock in Schertz at 5:15 p.m. His patrol car then collided with two other vehicles at the intersection. He was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. Deputy Horn had served with the Comal County Sheriff's Office for 11 and a half years. He is survived by his wife. Deputy Sheriff Ray Horn, Comal County Sheriff's Office, Texas. End of watch Thursday, January 17th, 2019. Second is Police Officer Sean Tudor of the Mobile Police Department in Alabama. Police Officer Sean Tudor was shot and killed as he and several other officers attempted to serve an arrest warrant at an apartment complex at 1545 Leroy Stephen Road at 3 p.m. The wanted subject had local and federal warrants for several charges. During the previous week, he had faked his own abduction in order to avoid reporting to jail. Shots were fired as officers attempted to take the man into custody, and Officer Tudor was fatally wounded. The subject was taken into custody at the scene. Officer Tudor had served the Mobile Police Department for 3 years. He had previously been recognized as Officer of the Month. Police Officer Sean Tudor, Mobile Police Department, Alabama. End of watch, Sunday, January 20th, 2019. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for taking the time to join me on the Voice of American Law Enforcement, Blue Lives Radio. I hope that you enjoyed today's broadcast, and there is much more to come as we enter 2019. If you would, I would really love for you to visit thewoundedblue.org. That's thewoundedblue.org. It's the new support and assistance organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. You're going to be hearing a lot about this because this is one of the most important organizations that I've ever been involved with, and it is going to touch the lives of hundreds of thousands of law enforcement families in this country. If you are in need of talking to someone, if you are a law enforcement professional and you are troubled by post-traumatic stress, you have been injured in the line of duty and are having issues dealing with it, contact us at this organization, thewoundedblue.org. Also, check out my books, amazon.com. You'll see them all. Thanks again for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement. We'll see you next week.